Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, most comprehensive Steeler site on the internet. And I'm David Todd from thehammerspeaks.com. Dave, we continue to have a lot of off-field activity. This is the slow time of the year, obviously, as we lead into the combine and the draft when things will pick up again. But boy, the Pittsburgh media is not shy on writing stories and speculating and stirring the pot.
Absolutely. It's what they do best. And I tell you, you said normally a slow time of year. It hasn't slowed down since the season ended. And it's been an everyday, almost every day, something new to write about. And quite recently, a lot of stuff to do with Hines Ward.
Yeah, Hines Ward's the big story. And I guess, you know, people who want to have points of view and haven't really seen much of what the Pittsburgh media has written can go to the Trib yesterday and read Dan Kovacevic's article and get a perspective that the Steelers are handling this terribly poorly, that they lack class in how they're doing this with Hines Ward, and they've really missed the boat, and they really they're disrespecting Hines Ward, one of my least favorite words in sports, I have to say. And if the other perspective comes this morning from Ron Cook in the Post-Gazette, and I'm on Twitter today, I retweeted Ron's article. I generally don't agree with a lot of what Ron writes, and I've said that many times, but I think he hit the mark on this one, saying the Steelers don't owe Hines Ward anything. Hines Ward doesn't owe the Steelers anything. This is a business. The guy worked for 14 years. He got paid handsomely for that. He's had what might very well be a Hall of Fame career. But, you know, his skills have deteriorated, and it's time for the team to move on. And this whole idea of disrespect and stuff like that, Ron Cook kind of poo-poos that idea. And that's generally where I come down, Dave, and I've been pretty adamant about it. And as we get into this a little bit more, I'll share some more of my thoughts. But what are your thoughts?
Well, I wrote something similar to what Ron Cook put up not too long ago on the blog about how the Steelers don't owe anything to Ward, you know, at this point, as far as just letting him hang around just because he wants to play. Now, on the flip side of that, though, I do subscribe a little bit to what Dayon wrote in the Trib, to the fact that, hey, at least tell the guy instead of having to hear it from the media. I actually do agree with that point. Now, whether or not Jason Lockefora's story,
that's the point. Now, is it, you know, Kevin Colbert said yesterday the Steelers haven't made a firm decision.
But I mean, do you really think they haven't made that decision, though, David?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. I do know that, you know, Jason Lockefora, who reported the story, said the same thing about Casey Hampton in 2009, and he happened to be wrong. So it's not as if, you know, guys can't get this wrong or that minds can't change at different times. Certainly what I've said all along is, you know, I think it's the direction the Steelers should move, but I don't think you need to move there any faster than the NFL calendar suggests you move there. If they have to do something because of the salary cap issues coming up here in March, then, okay, maybe decisions have to be made. But, you know, maybe you want to see if somebody takes a run at Mike Wallace. Maybe you want to see if you get Jericho Koch re-signed. I mean, I'm not for bringing Hines Ward back, but I don't think that means the Steelers have to make a decision today about it. They should extend this thing as long as possible and make what's the best decision for them as they gather more information.
And I agree with you there. Now, here's the thing, and we'll never know. You know, is Jason Lockefora just taking a very well-educated guess here, or was this a ball boy or you know, somebody's wife, or, you know, somebody feeding him information from within the organization? I think that's where the main thing is, and hey, Lockefora may indeed be right on this thing. I think the thing is you know, and we like I said, we won't know this. Where is that information coming from? If that information is being floated out there by the Steelers on purpose, you know, I have a problem with it, but all we can do is speculate on that.
Well, yeah, right. We're guessing on whether, you know, it's a real story from where that information came. And as you said, it could be, you know, one of any group of, 10 to 15 people. But if Kevin Colbert's going to say the Steelers line is the Steelers line, then, you know, that's what he's saying publicly. Now, look, the Steelers haven't done everything perfectly in this offseason. And very simply, I think they tried to do something politely by saying Bruce Arians retired, and that blew up in their face. Now, there was nothing malicious in that, and I think Jim Wexel has been right on this in how he's characterizing it. Look, the Steelers made a mistake in the way they said it. People understand it's a business, and people get fired, and that's probably, you know, he wasn't under contract, so maybe technically he wasn't fired, or his contract hadn't, you know, maybe he was because his contract hadn't expired yet this season. But, the Steelers, they're not going to bring Bruce Arians back. Now, say it however you want to say it. I think everybody understood it, but the media really ran with that. And now I think we see some of the same people running with this as if the Steelers have really done Hines Ward a disservice, and I just don't see that as being the case.
And what about the article yesterday, I think, by Mike Freeman on CBS calling, what Art Rooney II did as far as the coaching staff and all like that, calling that meddling and how that's very un-Steelers-like. What, did you get a chance to
read? Well, we talked about that as saying, you know, look, and that was written a couple weeks ago. That same article's been written, at times over the last 2 weeks when it looked like Art Rooney had a hand in the Arians thing. I don't know exactly how to view that. It's a question of whether you think Art Rooney II is a smart guy and as owner of the team should be involved in any of the decisions in any way, shape, or form. What I do feel very comfortable saying is Art Rooney is continually talking to Kevin Colbert, to Omar Khan, and to Mike Tomlin. He's not sitting up in a gilded chair in some, pristine office. Art Rooney's there. He's been around this team his whole life. I guess the jury's out over time about how influential he is in the actual decision-making. But what we've seen is the Steelers have continually put the right people in positions to make personnel decisions, to make coaching decisions, and Art Rooney's been involved in those hires. So I don't know that you can be too critical at any point in time. He's involved in the Mike Tomlin hire. He's involved in keeping Omar Khan here, who was mentioned as a possible candidate for the Indianapolis GM job.
Rams.
What's that?
The Rams.
The Rams GM job. But yeah, so, I don't think it's meddling. I don't think it's meddling.
Now, as far as, I think we're in agreement here. I just think the only thing is, and I think where most of the media is coming from it with the Hines Ward thing is, as far as the disrespect card, I think that's coming from, supposing that someone from within the Steelers organization alerted, Lock and Ford to this. So, yeah, but hey, that's what sells papers, David, talking about this type of stuff and playing that disrespect card and all like that. So, I think we're on both sides of the fence here. I just think that, it would be, if indeed that happened with someone with inside the Steelers organization, as I said, alerted Lock and Ford, I think that's wrong.
I don't disagree with that. I think, if it's, who knows? Maybe.
But we're not going to know. That's the thing.
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe it's one of the position coaches. Maybe it's, whomever it is that he has a relationship with and he'll get something back in the future. But, I'm surprised, I don't know. I'm surprised that there's, It is the day and age of Twitter that is driving this. I think 5 years ago, this would be a topic of conversation. But here's the other thing. When Steeler fans get all the Steeler fans who get upset about this, if Hines Ward goes out and catches seven passes next year and, eats up $1.5 million a cap and the Steelers go, 9-7 and it's because, they don't have the weapons on offense. They're the people that are going to turn immediately in Hines Ward and say, what the hell is he doing there? We need better receivers. We need, our fourth guy or fifth guy to be a better receiver. So, it is a shifting wind. And the media, as you said, they sell papers and they stir it up. And in Twitter, they get to make judgments instantaneously on every topic.
And, you know, there is, you're talking about the people that, you know, I see a lot of comments on the blog as well about people that really just seem to be Hines Ward fans that want him back, and I'll be damned, you know, what comes along with it, and if he cannot compete at a high level, or, you know, taking up a roster spot as a number four, number five receiver. And let's face it, you know, the years of Hines Ward playing special teams is long, long gone as well. And, you know, I know his role was diminished last year, especially late in the season and all. To me, and I'm with you, I just don't think you can use a roster spot on a guy unless you are sure that if a couple injuries happen, that this guy can step in and you not lose a beat on as far as the offense goes as the number two or number three receiver.
Yeah, and let's just follow that on with the next topic that's an obvious topic. There's a lot going on with the Steelers receivers. You wrote this morning really good stuff about Jericho Cotchery. Listen, the other thing, I think I've been very clear about this, and I've been clear about it since November 1st, is Hines Ward shouldn't be on the field, and Jericho Cotchery is a guy the Steelers need to sign. And I think you framed it really well. Even though he played about 300 snaps, he only had 16 catches, two touchdowns. So he didn't have what you would call the prototypical productivity. And he was getting some time there because Ward was demoted and you had Emmanuel Sanders hurt. But I am a big fan of Jericho Cotchery. He took less money to play for the Steelers this year than to stay with the Jets or possibly some other teams. He is supposed to be an A number one guy off the field, in the locker room, a type of guy you really do want in your organization, a really class act. And look, if the Steelers, they're obviously going to save money if they release Hines Ward, and they obviously have salary cap issues. And you said it's a question of how much money and how many snaps. If he's your fourth guy, which he's going to be, if everybody's healthy, essentially the fourth guy, is that worth, you know, is that worth paying him $10 million over four years, let's say, and guaranteeing, say, you know, $5 million of that? And can the Steelers afford to do that? I think if the Steelers were to come up with some numbers like that, Dave, I think that deal gets done. What do you think?
I think so, and I think as you said, he, you know, the amount of snaps that he played, you know, it was surprising when I went back and checked his number of snaps. I thought it was a little bit less than a hair over 300. You know, with 300 snaps, you would expect a little bit more than, I think, 11 regular season catches on that. So, you know, and he was not a sought-after guy last offseason. The Steelers brought him in. I think it was in August and all. So this is a guy that had a hamstring injury early in the year. Yeah, it's kind of hard to gauge his market value right now, but it can't be extremely high. And if they release Hines or terminate the contract of Hines Ward, kind of funnel some of that money in the direction of Jericho Cotchery, and depending on what the signing bonus is and what Cotchery is expecting, hey, there might be a team out there that thinks Jericho Cotchery's a solid number three guy, which I think he probably is. How much are they willing to pay for him, for that role, and how big of a discount would Cotchery be willing to take to get a 3 or 4 year deal possibly with the Steelers to play with the team that, I mean, he obviously liked. I mean, he's reiterated this twice now after the season on an interview with 93.7 The Fan, and now this article with the Star Ledger yesterday. So it seems like he genuinely wants to return. It seems like the Steelers genuinely want him back. He is a Steeler guy, just like you said. I'm really hoping this happens, too. I don't think there could be a better person to put in a number four receiver position that could also, you know, serve as a mentor to these young receivers as well. I think he's a perfect fit.
I think we are in agreement there. And it brings up some interesting stuff. I mean, I think the right number for Jericho Cotchery is him getting a salary of something along the lines of $1.5 million to $2 million a year, and then, you know, he's going to get a signing bonus, and if they can work out those numbers, I think that's kind of what you'd like to be paying him. It's high for a fourth receiver, but, I think that's where you go with this guy. But the Steelers are going to have a lot of money invested in wide receivers 2 years from now, because not only do you have Mike Wallace, and we'll get into Mike Wallace now, as a restricted free agent who has a chance to make a lot of money, you've got Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders falling up right behind him. And I dare say that the Steelers may have to say they're going to pay Jericho Cotchery this year because they can't pay Manny Sanders next year.
Well, I think that's left to be determined. I mean, let's face it.
Sure. Total speculation.
Right. Now, they have a lot of work still to be done on a salary cap now, especially, and we're going to get into this Mike Wallace thing here. But remember, we're working towards the magic year of 2014 where the salary cap is expected to skyrocket because of the new TV contracts kicking in and all like that. Next year will be the hardest year for the Steelers. This year and next year, basically also depending on how much of this money they're kind of pushing forward right now with these restructures. Basically a lot of these are taking base salaries, turning them into signing bonuses and stretching out the liability of that over the remaining years of the contract. So I'm not ready to say they're definitely going to be able to afford one of Antonio Brown or Emmanuel Sanders, but I'm not ready to rule out that they won't be able to afford both of them as the roster will continue to shape and trend from older to younger. It's going to be a much younger roster this year than it was last year, but there will still, I think, be a lot of, a good bunch of veterans in there. But the year after that, it's going to be a very, very young roster, I have a feeling, in 2013. And I think, you'll have the, you'll have some, because let's face it, Brown and Sanders will still be restricted free agents. So, you can tag one if you want to, and then you can, offer a high round tender to the other one. So I don't think they're going to be any problem as long as they prove to stay healthy and stay on the same course that they've been on. I don't think they're going to have a problem keeping both Brown and Sanders.
Well, and that I've got tons of love for Manny Sanders. There's no question by the end of the season, Antonio Brown was the Steelers' best receiver, and I think you could probably make an argument that Manny Sanders was certainly the second most productive receiver. Mike Wallace really had the drop off in the second half of the year, and it just raises the question. I think you and I probably agree on this, but let me phrase it and ask you the question. I think in terms of wide receiver skills, we would probably say Mike Wallace is the third or fourth best receiver, leaving Hines Ward out of the conversation. Third or fourth best receiver of the group of guys that we're talking about. But Mike Wallace has something that is unique in the sense that he's got, being one of the fastest guys in the league, he's got over-the-top speed that you just can't find, and so he has incredible value in that. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, oh shit, speed goes a long way. Yep. And that's what's made him so dangerous. He's made even more dangerous, though, by the emergency of Antonio Brown. And I've all along, I've thought Emmanuel Sanders is the better route runner. Now, of course, the problem with Sanders and we don't know, and I've been on this since he had surgery after the Super Bowl, is how are these feet injuries going to affect him down the line? I've harped on that constantly, that you hate to hear about young receivers having foot problems so early on in their career. I think Emmanuel Sanders has the potential to be a great possession receiver in the mold of Hines Ward on down the line with a little bit more speed. To put Mike Wallace third on the list right now, it's tough, being as how Emmanuel Sanders can't stay on the field. And Antonio Brown, his inconsistencies and all, that go along with his route running and ability to pick up things and check downs and all like that kind of hampers him a little bit. I'm not ready to say Mike Wallace is third on the list, but I think it's definitely a 1A and a 1B right now with Antonio Brown.
Yeah, well, I guess I wasn't saying he's the third best receiver. I think in terms of his receiving skills, his pass-catching skills, we saw a lot of times Mike Wallace catching the ball with his body, the big play in the Denver game that, may have turned the Steelers' season around. Had he made that catch, they might have been playing the next week in New England. The elusiveness catching the ball, I think all three guys have it in spades. But I think maybe he might even be third in that, and that's just because the other two guys are exceptional at that. So it's obviously a good problem to have here.
And it's going to be interesting to see how Todd Haley gets in these, and Ben Roethlisberger said in his interview a little bit with Ed Bouchette worried about the receivers picking up the new offense and all like that. But it's going to be interesting to see Todd Haley has coached receivers. That's basically where he got his start with was coaching the receivers. So, and we know of all the blow-ups that he had with Anquan Boldin in Arizona. He's going to be in the faces of these young guys going forward. And, a guy like Wallace catching the ball in his body and all like that, Brown running the wrong routes and stuff like that. These guys are going to get a come to Jesus here pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think the media has probably made a tad too much of this too, but I think your point is really good about he's known to have coached up some guys like Dwayne Bowe. Certainly he got a ton out of the Arizona receivers when he had Boldin and Fitzgerald. So, maybe there's room for improvement. And I'll again point to Jim Wetzel as a guy who's taken a stand kind of out there, kind of fired up against Pro Football Talk's Tom Florio and against some of the other Pittsburgh media in saying that, look, maybe this is an opportunity where you have a guy like Todd Haley who comes in. You know what? Maybe he's a better coach than Bruce Arians. Maybe he is going to coach these guys up and make them better players. And it's a point of view that is certainly has some validity. Now, everybody is focused on Haley's inability to maybe get along with people as well as he should. But let's not discount the coaching factor. And everybody you talk to says Todd Haley has a good football mind, if not a great football mind. And, maybe we see some really good things come out of that.
I talked when I had Nick with me on Friday, we talked a little bit about the Todd Haley press conference and all. And one of the things that kind of came out of that discussion is, we've seen Ben Roethlisberger, when he's been frustrated with these young receivers, though, and he really doesn't get in their ass much. He gives them that kind of that patented Ben Roethlisberger grimace and all. I'll throw this question to you. Does Ben Roethlisberger, we know Todd Haley's going to be in the ass of Ben, this upcoming season, does Ben in turn need to take a little bit harder stance with these young receivers and get in their face a little bit more?
Well, I think that suggests maybe that they're doing a lot of things wrong. And I think, we saw Antonio Brown miss some hot routes during the course of the year and, maybe run the wrong pattern at times. But, I don't know. I mean, I think people respond differently to different approaches. Not everybody responds the same way. I know, having played a reasonably high level in sports myself, I've had various coaches, and some were really hard asses, and other guys realized that, if you're a hard ass on a guy, maybe you're better off patting him on the back and talking to him, because that'll help his confidence and he's going to react better to it. So I don't profess to know these receivers themselves, how they react to that kind of stuff. They're a confident and justifiably cocky group of young players. But I don't know that Ben needs to go all freaking crazy on guys. We don't see much of that from Drew Brees. We see Peyton do it, and in somewhat the same way as you described Ben. It's not screaming and yelling, and we certainly don't see Brady screaming and yelling very often. But all these guys are willing to get in it with guys, and I think Ben is more or less the same.
And Todd Haley said during his press conference the other day that if you're sensitive, this is not the place that you're gonna want to be. So I've joked quite a few times that I hope they have a 7-second delay in some of them headsets and all, and I hope Ben Roethlisberger has a volume button in that helmet of his, because there's gonna be a whole lot of yelling and screaming even before we get to the season.
Right, exactly, and that'll be. It's going to be fun to watch, and let's continue on the offensive side of the ball, because that's really dominated what's been going on in the media here. Yesterday, again, you wrote about Kevin Colbert's comments about Rashard Mendenhall. Now, injuries are there. We have a general sense of how long injuries take to heal. We know Mendenhall's injury is a 6 to 9 month type of thing, and it could very well be that July 1st. He's running and he comes back and August 1st, he's good to go. It also could be, if it heals slowly or there are any kind of problems along the way, September 1st, he hasn't even started running yet, and there's a long way to go. So the answer is we have to wait and see how this plays out, but somehow the PUP list, in the course of the conversation, the physically unable to perform list comes up with the possibility that Rashard won't be able to go by the time the season opens. And then all of a sudden people are talking about how Rashard Mendenhall is not going to be around in 2012. And again, one of the media members today kind of threw that out there that that might be the case. So you wrote about it yesterday. You know, what are you thinking?
Well, there's you wake up this morning, everybody's talking about cutting Hines Ward, and they're also the fear of him not playing at all next season. Now, is there a chance that Rashard Mendenhall will not play next year? Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, because ACL injuries in running backs, as Colbert laid out yesterday, can take longer because they're expected to do more when they return with the cutting and the change of direction and all like that. And Mendenhall, like Casey Hampton, did not have surgery until after the season, okay? So he really has basically just started his rehabilitation probably a couple of weeks into it now. The good thing about the PUP list, and that's what I tried to break down in the post yesterday, is it's almost certain when they show up at training camp in Latrobe that Mendenhall is going to be put on what's called the active PUP list, and that's designed for preseason. For training camp, he has to be placed on active PUP that day one if he wants to qualify to be put on reserve PUP once the season starts. And being on active PUP means he cannot practice with the team until he's removed from the active PUP, which I doubt will be the entire preseason. So at that point, when the season rolls around, if Rashard is running on the side and looking good and doing everything and meeting, you know, the doctor's expectations of being 100%, the Steelers then need to make the decision, okay, do we move him, do we keep him on the 53-man roster, or do we move him to reserve PUP? When he's on reserve PUP, he does not count against the 53-man roster. His salary cap number still counts against the salary cap, but another thing with the reserve PUP is he cannot play for the first 6 weeks of the season. And that's 6 weeks, that's not six games, okay? So that's the first 6 weeks of the season. After 6 weeks, a 3 week window opens up where he can begin practicing at any time during those 3 weeks without counting against a 53-man roster. The day that he starts practicing, another 3 week window opens up to the Steelers that they have to make a decision of whether or not to put him on IR, release him, or put him on the 53-man roster. So this thing, with these windows and the way they go, he could return back to play as early as week 7, or at the latest, he could return back to week 13. So the Steelers basically have 13 weeks of the regular season to make a decision on this guy. So if let's say it goes long in and it takes about week 12 or week 13 in the season to get back, he can get back and start easing into the action by week 13 and be ready for the playoff run. So I would not rule out totally, and that's what the PUP list is used for, and I expect them to use every ounce of it in that fashion and not place him on injured reserve and not release him. His salary cap hit is affordable to the fact that you can wait and see what happens with him.
Yeah. So that means, you know, they go into the season. Certainly Isaac Redman's stock went up with his performance against Cleveland, even though he dropped a couple balls, and Denver, two very good games. The Steelers have, it looks like Mwelde Moore is going to be gone. They haven't officially done that, correct?
Well, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent.
He's unrestricted, yeah. So he's gone. You obviously have the two kids, Clay and Dwyer, coming back. Dwyer with the foot injury, and we'll see how that heals. But that's not thought to be that severe. And then you've got Baron Batts, a seventh round pick from last year, who looked good in the preseason. So it'll be interesting to see if the Steelers. Well, we certainly would expect the Steelers to look at a running back somewhere. I would think round 3 is probably a little too early, but 4 through 6 again. They got Clay as an unrestricted free agent. They got Dwyer in the sixth round, which he really fell down the boards. And I've been impressed with the way both those guys run, and you rightly continue to point out that running is a major part of a running back's job, but it is not the only part. Blitz pickup and pass protection is a huge part of it, and we'll see how those guys come along in that respect, because that's something that they haven't shown necessarily that they can do, which, you know, Mwelde Moore was excellent at, and Mendenhall and Redman have become very good at as well.
Matt Williamson from ESPN.com, who we've had on the podcast before, tweeted last night that He says, you know, running back has to be a priority for the Steelers now with the Mendenhall news. And I disagree with him that it's a priority. And Colbert really basically did too yesterday, although we don't know how much of that's lip service. But, I mean, are you really going to – and I'm assuming what Williamson was saying there was, you know, within the first three rounds, even maybe even first four rounds of the draft. I disagree. I mean, are you telling me that you're really going to draft a running back in regardless of best – now, of course, if somebody just unexpectedly falls and the value is just incredible, you know, for round three or four for a certain running back, okay, I can go with that. But to come right out and say it's a priority now, I'm not willing to say that, you know, because as you said, we have, you know, you got Dwyer, who definitely there is some concern about Dwyer and his attitude and going forward here. But you also have John Clay, who showed some promise, you know, in very, very, very limited action. We don't know what Baron Batch is yet, although everything, I mean, according to the training camp he had, you know, he's a star in the making there, but coming off the ACL is definitely going to be tough for him. And then you have Redmond, who's an undrafted free agent as well. I just am not ready to say that it's a priority in a draft. Now, I can see them maybe drafting one round five, round six, round seven, or using one of the compensatory picks should they get multiple. I think it's good. I think we're going to definitely get one. I think we possibly could get two as well. Do you see it as a priority, though?
No, right where I said I'm there with four through six, something like that. They've got other priorities. Both lines continue to be priorities. They'll be looking for linebackers, and they'll always be looking for defensive backs. So, you know, it's on the list, but no, it's not. Yeah, I'm not even sure position wise. It's third in priority, unless as we think about return men, if you think that maybe you're not going to use Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders, then maybe you look for a guy. Your fifth receiver or your a running back to be look again for a return guy. And that'll be an interesting thing, Dave, to see how the Steelers look at that next year if they decide that now Brown and Sanders are too valuable as wide receivers, being, you know, however you want to count them, two of the top three guys, if they take them out of the return game.
Yeah, most definitely. And I even kind of wrote in my first mock draft, I wrote in a receiver in, I think it was the fourth round that I have. And I could definitely see them taking a receiver for the sheer fact that, yeah, A, you need to start, you know, you always got to keep the supply, you know, flow going there. And you know, you wouldn't think that a rookie receiver is going to contribute that much outside of special teams. But if you bring back somebody like a Cotchery, or even if you bring back someone like Ward, you're going to need a guy behind them as a fifth wide receiver to help on special teams and start grooming for a second year and a third year type contribution. So regardless of what happens with the rest of the depth chart, I could see that happening. And if the kid is able to chip in on returns, the all the much better as far as that goes.
Yeah, and we've talked about it. Look, if you're a draft pick and you're not a top three round pick, and even some of those guys need to be able to do it, but you better making the team, it's playing special teams is a big way to add value to make the team. So, you know, all those guys who get drafted along those round, you know, at those levels need to be adding value on special teams. Then, you know, we've covered a lot of these position battles. You asked me a little bit about Todd Haley earlier. Look, the deal is, I think we've covered most of it. We talked about it during the week. It's an unexpected hire. That certainly doesn't mean it's a bad hire. I was expecting an unexpected hire, but the way I was phrasing it is, I think it wouldn't surprise me at all if it was a guy out of the blue who Tomlin was given a first chance to. Well, it's somewhat the opposite. This is a guy who's well known around the league. He's been a head coach. He's getting his third chance. But he's not that old. He's 45 years old. He's a proven mind, and I just think, you know, everybody wants to be on the extreme sides of this. Most people seem to be coming down that it's a power struggle, and Ben, this is to kick Ben's ass and all of that. And I want to be more middle of the road about things and say, just like when Art Rooney hired to Mike Tomlin, it seems like Haley came in and had an impressive interview. Now, look, I don't think anybody's blowing smoke up people's ass when they say that kind of stuff, because they hired the guy. This is too expensive a business to kind of hire a guy who doesn't impress you. You're not doing people favors when you hire your offensive coordinator. So, you know, I firmly believe that Haley did come in, said a lot of things to Tomlin and to Art II, and said, you know, impressed these guys, and they gave him the job. So because the Steelers' track record is really good in general at making hires, and even more so recently, both in the front office and with the coaching staffs, I don't know how you do anything but give them the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And I'm, you know, I told in my interview with Trib Live Radio last week, you know, I'm as optimistic as they come, David. Now, was Todd Haley the top guy on my list? Absolutely not. I mean, all along I've said I was into Randy Feetner corner hoping he got the job. But I did, you know, from day one after the Arians move was announced, I had Todd Haley last on the potential candidates on the list that could be a fit. You know, and this is yet to be determined for me to jump up on a table right now and say, yes, Todd Haley is going to be the man. I know this for a fact based on his track record and all like that. Well, I can't do that. Hell, I can't even tell you based on what he's done in the past, you know, with him being able to adapt to personnel to have both a top passing game at one time with Arizona and a top running game with Kansas City. I can't tell you right now what direction he's going to run or what type of exact offense he's going to run. And Mike Tomlin even viewed that in his opening remarks at the press conference introducing Haley, that they take great pleasure in that being a mystery right now. So is he qualified? Yes, I mean, he's qualified for the job, but you know, I'm going to take a wait and see approach. I'm not going to sit here and bash the hiring, and I'm not going to sit here and praise the hiring either. And I think it's ridiculous to be on either sides of those two fences right now doing such.
A moment of sanity coming to the podcast here less of the extremes. I think we are
sanity and me don't go hand in hand.
I think we are 100% in agreement on exactly what you just said. I couldn't have phrased it better myself. So, all right. Well, that covers a lot of the offensive side of the ball.
Well, and let's real quick, let's discuss this Mike Wallace thing and Colbert's saying, throwing out there that it's a possibility that they used a franchise tag on Wallace, who is a restricted free agent next year. You know, what's your thoughts on that? Because basically you're going to tie up, you know, right around $9 million plus until you get him signed to a long, you know, to a long-term deal. So do you take that chance? And another good thing about putting that franchise tag out there, and let's say it's a non-exclusive one, it would cost the team two first-round draft picks to sign him away versus the one it would sign by just putting a regular first-round restricted tender on him. But like I said, on the flip side, you've got to clear that extra, you know, $7 million prior to the start of the, you know, want you to be prepared when you put that franchise tag on him to fit that underneath the cap in the meantime. How do you feel about that?
Here's how I feel about it, David. It goes back to a little bit what I talked about yesterday. I think the Steelers need to be prepared to not have one of these three receivers on the team 2 years from now. And possibly even, when I say 2 years from now, I mean after two seasons from now. They'll all obviously be on the team this year. But the following season, I think there's a chance that they just, depending on, you know, where the cap is, when these guys when Brown and Sanders become RFAs, you know, you got to look at your receiver core and just say, how much money can we put in there? And so I'm not opposed to the 1 year putting a tag on Wallace this year, seeing how he performs, and then making a decision about how you're going to allocate the money between those three guys. It gives Mike Wallace a ton of money. I'm sure he'd rather sign a longer term deal, but he'd make a ton of money, maybe not be set for life, but, you know, be pretty damn close to set for life. And then the Steelers can make a decision after this season and see who they want to pay the money to. And maybe it's all three, but maybe they only want to pay two of them.
Well, here's the thing though. I mean, just because you put the franchise tag, that let's say it's $9.4 million as the projections say, that only going to count against the cap if you don't sign him to a long-term deal before the beginning of the season. Now, basically, to me, you're not going to put that franchise tag on him if you're not, you know, fairly certain that you're going to sign him to a long-term deal so you can lower that number. Basically, just the same way that they did with Lamar Woodley last year, 10, yep, 10 point whatever million franchise tag on him until they had him, you know, right before the season started. They got him to an extension there that lowered that cap number there. Basically, you're using this more as a protection against losing him. You know, because let's face it, with them doing away with the first and third round tender as the top thing with the restricted tender tag, and now it costing a first round to another team. Do you think another team would be willing to pay not only a big contract to Mike Wallace, but be willing to give up a first-round draft pick in the process?
I don't see it. I just don't see teams in the league doing these types of things. I think Mike Wallace, if he had had a whole season like he did the first half, then somebody might say, yeah, that's worth a first-round pick and the salary we're going to have to pay him. But, you know, I mean, would the New England Patriots take a run at him? Sure. I think you mentioned them before. He certainly would be an impactful guy and just the type of guy they need. They've got two first-round picks, two second-round picks. So, I mean, I won't say it's impossible, but you just don't see teams in the league giving up first-round picks to sign guys. But, you know, like I said, it crazier things have happened.
Well, I mean, that's – and if you're going to throw him out there on a first-round tender like that
– But, again, they get to match, so, that, you know, you do have that.
Yeah, and but if they put that – you know,
maybe the Patriots just do it to screw them.
Well, you know, you put a poison pill in there, you know. you put a poison pill in there. We've seen that before, and that's, you know if they can clear the cap room – which is going to be tough to do because you're adding on another $7 million now, the difference between a restricted first-round tender tag and a franchise tag. If they can clear the room to get that $9.4 million in there initially to begin March, I say do that, assuming that you're going to sign him to a long-term deal at some point leading up to the regular season.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's the approach because, you know, ideally – if they did something like that, you'd see his cap number go from whatever it is, 9 or so, probably down to 4 or 5, and that's going to clear $5 million bucks. And when you're talking about numbers, you know, we're talking about 3 or 4% of the overall cap that could make a difference for guys. So all interesting stuff. I guess I have a little bit of a sour taste on Mike Wallace here based on the second half of the season and the playoff game. I don't think he's an extremely talented guy who I want in the organization. But if he had a second half like the first half, we're talking first team all pro and a guy who you just say, you know, this guy is now in the conversation with Megatron and Larry Fitzgerald and some of the other guys is the best receiver in football. And that drop off just makes me just a little bit weary. And, you know, like you said about Haley, this is a guy, maybe Haley makes Mike Wallace that guy.
And let's face it too, the market value, and I've kind of got projected even before we knew the tag amounts and all franchise tag amounts, I projected Mike Wallace's value to be somewhere, a $9 million a season average of, you know, when you look at the contract and break it down that way. So basically, you know, he'd be looking at probably a deal 4 years, $36 million, 5 years, say $44, $45 million. So, he's going to be with you for at least a couple, 2 or 3 years if you sign him to that big deal like that. So, and that's kind of what I have as market value gauged. I'm willing to bet his agent has that market value gauged probably slightly higher than that.
Yeah. And let's, Dave, we're rolling along here, but let's just throw a couple other things. The Casey Hampton stuff, probably in terms of the injuries, that's a big one because the Steelers don't have a lot of depth at that position, and it's going to force things. And you wrote a little bit more about his pup potential.
Yeah, I mean, it's looking more and more. I mean, let's face it, he had the surgery about the same time Rashard, just a shortly time after, I think, than Rashard did. Now, the thing about big guys, and I think Colbert said this yesterday, they're able to what they're expected to do on the field, they're able to get back, back to health quicker. But it's still not out of the question. It seems like even if he does return to the Steelers in 2012, that he starts he'll at least start training camp on PUP, and will he be ready for the regular season or not? Is it worth? I mean, and let's face it too, that big cap number that he has and that base salary that he's due of $4.8 million, we know that's got to get trimmed and will get trimmed if he's going to stay. play, or do you just go ahead and release him outright? But you know, and wait till he's healthy and then sign him back to the roster at a minimum deal and just eat the dead money as is in the meantime. The thing is, I don't know about is what type of injury settlement. Being he's this close, you know, he's not 100% healthy right now, obviously. If you cut him now, what are the stipulations as far as an injury settlement, and how does that affect the salary cap along with it and all right now? But, I mean, this is a guy that definitely is not going to be 100% by the time training camp rolls around.
And I think the short answer is this is why Omar Khan and Kevin Colbert get the big bucks, because they're going to have to make these decisions and about where things go. But as we've talked about with Hines Ward and everything else, the Steelers get they don't have to make this decision today, and they're going to have more information from doctors. You're going to see the process of rehab and recovery and see where guys are. And now they'll have to make a decision about how they approach draft and how they approach free agency. But, you know, again, these are decisions they have shown in the past that they prepare for, you know, all sorts of contingencies, and, you know, they'll continue to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Kevin Colbert, I believed him yesterday when he said he has no idea what this roster is going to look like right now, because even though they've made quite a dent in the salary cap thus far with the restructures and all, there really is a long way to go, you know, because my salary cap figures that I have up on SteelersDepot.com, I don't even have in those futures contracts yet that are going to go into effect soon. And begin in March, and you know, getting to a rule of 51 number will really start to shape over the next couple of weeks. Now they have right at about a month now before the new fiscal year starts in the NFL. But I think over the next couple of weeks, I think he said that they're going to start meeting this week on that, and probably heading either late this week or early next week is when we're going to see more restructures and or terminations of contracts.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's going to happen, and we'll see how it plays out. Dave, I wanted to get to one email we got that I just have in front of me. Let me just make sure I get the name right here. Where is it? But we got an email, I think, asking us about Jason Worlds and what we expected of Jason Worlds this coming year and playing time and kind of his role. And while I'm pulling up the name, why don't you take a shot at that?
The jury's less out than it was going into last season. Is he ready to step in at a right outside linebacker spot for James Harrison? I don't know. I mean, he was, you know, if you had a graph on his play from last year filling in for Woodley, it was up and down. Now it's kind of to be expected, because he really has not had much playing time in the defense. And of course he, you know, due to the lockout and all last year, you know, he did not have the OTA sessions. He did not have the mini camps to work on. This is the year for him, but still, how much playing time do you expect to get from a guy that's a backup to both Lamar Woodley and James Harrison right now? I mean, really, the guy, if Harrison and Woodley stay healthy, they're not coming off the field.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly right, and you hope those guys stay healthy and don't have to come off the field. And then it'll be interesting to see what happens as the Steelers look forward to having money tied up, and if they think Jason World can be a player and make the, God forbid, the decision that they can move on without James Harrison, the more likely the two guys, because of his age, to be let go going, you know, 2 years from now.
I think this is the last year for Harrison, one way or the other. I've got a gut feeling that they're going to have to move on past that, past this year. I mean, they blocked Woodley up and all on the other side. He's good. So this will be the year where hopefully Worlds makes the jump on the practice field and in these camps and all to take over for Harrison after the 2012 season.
Yeah, and that was from Steve Cayley. Steve, thanks for shooting in the email. Dave, why don't you give people the info if they want to email us, or they can obviously get us on Twitter.
Yeah, you can find the podcast on iTunes as well. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow David at Hammer Speaks. Follow me at Steelers Depot. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We try to get to as many of these things as we can. We're going to have a lot of a lot of time to take questions here over the course leading up to training camp. This coming season. So feel free to do that. I have the hotline if you want to leave us a voicemail up in this post as well, and we invite you to do that as well. And we might even use it the sound clip on the show.
Great stuff, Dave. Anything we want to touch on before we close?
I think that's about got it there. Kind of watch for some moves probably at the end of this week leading up to next week, and we're going to have plenty to talk about all summer long by the looks at the way things have started this offseason.
Yeah, exactly. Well, fantastic. What number were we on here? 76?
77.
77. Well, thanks for listening. As always, feel free to drop us a note, put comments on iTunes. Appreciate all the support. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.